They were frightened.
I want masks. What is this?
Listen, I'll grant your Felger is crazy.
Here we go.
Man, I got to lay off the peyote.
It was horrendous.
Felger and Mass, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Bye! Any developing opinions on the game? Did you go back and watch any of it? Did you see any of it? Have any, you think about anything, you know, from, again, Sunday against Jacksonville that you can, I don't know, just any developing opinions on the game?
Well, look, Murray sent out an email this morning about that wheel route on the left sideline late in the game. And it would have been in the fourth quarter when Bortles threw the ball to Fournette. And it was, who was it, Murray, in coverage? Marquise Flowers.
Yeah, it was 2:12 left in the game. First and 10, Jacksonville, I believe, at the Patriots' 38-yard line.
So I couldn't remember whether it was Flowers or Eric Lee that was in coverage, because frankly, when it comes to the Patriots' linebackers, I have trouble distinguishing one stinkbag linebacker from the next one. To me, it's just it's a matter of picking your poison. But the play was there. The play was there. They missed it. The ball wasn't. Now, I don't know whether Fournette ran the wrong route. Like Murray and I were just talking about this a second ago, where, you know, Fournette was supposed to cut in, at least if you believe Romo on the telecast. And then you add in the play at the end of the game that Gilmore made, and it was a good play. But if the ball was thrown better with a little more air under it, that, you know, the play could have gone for a touchdown. And when you add those things up, you know, the realization you come to? If Jacksonville had a real quarterback, they'd have won the game. They'd have won the game. And so, like, you know what I mean? Like, I look at a couple of teams in that league now and say, they're in the Final Four. Jacksonville's in the Final Four. Minnesota's in the Final Four. Neither one of them has a quarterback. But as it pertains to the Patriots game in particular, they picked a good day to be a little bit off their game. Because if the Jags had even, you know, had a guy who could make a play. Okay, Bortles played well. But a lot of his throws were easy. If they had a guy who could make a play at the position, Jacksonville would have won the game. And for that matter, they might not have taken a knee at the end of the second quarter. Like, you know, there were other variables in there that they might have been more aggressive if they had a guy who could make a play.
All right, folks, we're talking amongst ourselves till Bedard gets here, so here's your chance to get in before he starts filling up the air with his film study. 617-779-0985 on that play, Murray, when I first saw it. I said to Fournette, lay out for that ball.
I put it on Fournette and not Bortles. I thought he made the throw, and immediately, and as just referenced it, Romo says that he expected Fournette to go in, and it's not what he does. You know, I like Fournette. Obviously, I've talked about him enough over the season, but that's not what he does. He's not a pass-catching back out of the backfield. If they have T.J. Yeldon there, to me, that's more of a coaching screw-up. If that's Yeldon, you probably have a catch, and there's problems.
Okay, I agree with that last statement, Murray, 1,000%. 1,000. Do you want to keep going? Because I got to follow up on that.
No. Go right ahead.
Because that leads me to the next thing. And my takeaway is this. And it's really a big picture thing as well. And that is, Patricia had a good day. That adjustment in the second half with the blitzing and sending guys, you know, which is sort of out of their character, that was a big decision. And
Do you think that was him?
So that's, you know, that's really at the core of it, isn't it? Is that Bill making the call? I mean, do we always just give Bill the credit but blame the coordinators when something goes wrong? Like, I mean, those coordinators in some respects are in an unfair spot. I'd like to know, whose idea was it?
I got to believe that one's Bill.
Because it was a good idea?
No, because it's a big philosophical change. Like, that is, Bill doesn't believe in blitzing. They don't blitz usually. They just don't do it.
Patricia can't send the dogs unless Bill says okay.
Right, because I think Bill, you know, look, ultimately Bill's got veto power, but I think... Yes, exactly right. That's a big one. That's a big change.
Okay, I wonder. Did it germinate with Bill and it was his call, or did it germinate with Patricia and Bill just said, okay, you know, we'll give it a shot, and did he defer to the coordinator? Either way, do I underestimate the loss a guy like Patricia is going to be? And McDaniels, and again, we've talked about it a lot. I've talked a lot about the totality of the changes in the offseason, both coordinators, maybe Caserio and the personnel department, and a new quarterback you have to draft and develop. Like, that's a lot on Bill's plate. I've said that a lot. But just specifically in a vacuum, am I overlooking the coordinator thing? I mean, Patricia's been here a long time, longer than we realize, where he's been on the staff and, you know, as an assistant before he became the coordinator. And so whether Patricia called those blitzes or not, you know he's got say. You know he makes calls on his own. You know that he's... Bill's surrounded by a good person that he trusts who makes good calls. And I think that was a huge part of the game in the second half. The Patriots sending that pressure. Is the next guy with Brian Flores, is he going to step in and do that? Can Bill rely on it? Does Bill have to spend a lot of time covering for Flores to make the calls for him, and then what's happening on offense? You know what I mean? Like, there's just a trickle-down effect there. I just thought that was a big part to the game. And I'll just say it was also where the Patriots coached this circles around Jacksonville, because I think Jacksonville, for Murray's point right there, where Patricia makes an adjustment, starts sending extra guys, and you start holding Jacksonville, what does Jacksonville start doing? Handing off to Lawrence Fournette out of the shotgun four straight times in the fourth quarter and throwing to Lawrence Fournette.
Leonard.
Then what got him there was throwing to Yeldon and throwing to 30 and throwing to these other guys. Now all of a sudden in the fourth quarter, they're running Fournette up the middle out of the exact same formation that Bortles in the shotgun. Meanwhile, the Pats have made an adjustment. So I think the coaching right there in the second half was a huge difference. Greg Bedard, Boston Sports Journal. What do you think?
Well, as far as how much you're underrating the departure of Patricia, I think it's manageable. I mean, obviously he has a lot of more game experience than Flores is going to have, but the Patriots basically have their defensive formula where...
Was that second half their formula?
Yeah, when they need it. I mean, we've seen it over the years. I mean, basically, red zone, if they're down, then they start blitzing. And there wasn't anything like really exotic in what they were doing. They just did more of it. And I just think it's something where, you know, I think the game plan for the defense was, and I would have done the same thing, was that they said, well, Bortles can't beat us from the pocket. We'll just do that. We'll play coverage. Go ahead. Try to beat us. Well, they did a great job. And he was on his way to beating you, and you had to change it up. So I didn't think it was anything. Do I think Patricia did a great job? Yeah. I wrote my whole column, you know, off the game off that. About the second half adjustments.
Okay, but the red zone thing, Greg, how many times is Jacksonville in the red zone in the second half?
No, I'm just talking in general.
Oh, okay.
I'm just talking like they're known, they don't blitz like till they get to like the 20-yard line.
Okay, so but this is what I'm saying, though. In the second half, they blitzed a lot more.
They had to.
Oh, no, right, I'm not criticizing them for it. I'm giving them credit for it. Ultimately, but I'm saying, don't you think that came from Bill?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think what they get together, Bill, Matt, you know, I'm sure Bill's always talking with the coordinators, and I'm sure he said, you know what, you know, our thought that we can just sit back and Bortles will turn the ball over or won't be able to complete enough passes against us is not working. We're going to have to bring some pressure, so let's do it.
What else did the film show you?
To back Brady, I guess, because Brady basically wanted to come out after the game and say, you know what, I had my C game, you know, and I won with my C game, and Bill... For some reason, weirdly, I don't know what's going on with them, but keeps downplaying it.
You know what's going on with them. You wrote a great story about what's going on with them. Don't give
yeah,
me
but
that.
I thought it was just a temporary thing. I mean, I didn't, you know, like I wrote at the time, it's not going to affect them this season, and they'll get over it in the offseason. You know, when they all sit around and realize we're all going to be in the Hall of Fame in 10 years. Really, this kind of BS is... We're going to look back on this and be like, this is the end. This is how it ended. So anyways, to back Brady, I did think that he probably had, for him, I guess you could say C game, but I would say it was probably a B game for him. So I would say the ball did not, I would say he was affected by the injury in the game. Not hugely, but, you know, just enough where, you know, his accuracy, some of the ball sailed on him. The Gronk injury play was a high throw. There were other... High throw to Hogan over the middle. There was that play where Cooks made a nice play, catching it on the sideline, getting 2 feet down, then he got walloped. That ball came out funny and a little bit higher. But I thought, you know, down the stretch, Brady was money as he always is.
So what else? Give me another takeaway from the film, Greg.
I thought Trey Flowers was phenomenal in this game. Like, all the way around, run, pass... He was just tremendous. I also thought Patrick Chung, you know, there were maybe a couple plays here and there, but outside of that, he was all in the second half. He was awesome. He was so physical, really a tone setter, did a bunch of different things. And, you know, I mean, my big takeaway continues to be about how they changed things up in the second half and really, you know, forced the issue on Jacksonville. I did not have a problem with I heard you guys talking yesterday. I did not have a problem with what Jacksonville did offensively in the second half. This is who they are. You cannot say, well, you need to do this to beat the Patriots. That's just not who they are. They
right.
can't drop Blake Bortles back 45 times and win.
Four straight times on first down in the fourth quarter. Handoffs to Fournette out of the shotgun. Come on.
Sometimes it worked for him.
Oh, come on. No, it didn't.
In third quarter, yeah.
Okay, I mean the fourth quarter. They went four straight first downs, their first four first downs in the fourth quarter, shotgun handoff to Fournette.
I mean, if they'd had him under center there and run play action, guys would have been open.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That's what got him there, was the play action and the little boots and the little, all that stuff.
This is what happens when you advance by hiding your quarterback.
No, this is what happens.
You can't just change all of a sudden.
This is what happens. We're going to pound him with the running back. That's what happens. As opposed to spreading the ball and scheming it up and trying to find where they're weak. We're going to give them for that. And they fell into that stupid.
I don't think it was that. I think it was
their coaching 101.
They were trying to continue to hide Bortles. That's
give
them
for that. We're
going to
give them for that right down the throat till they prove they can stop it, even though they've stopped it every time. Oh, so stupid. So
coaches call plays because they know their players.
It's cliche.
And the reason that they didn't air it out with Bortles on first down,
they don't have to air it out.
They knew it was going to be a losing proposition.
Dink and dunk. No one's asking him to air it out. Do what he did in the first half, those short little passes. It's what he did brilliantly against Pittsburgh, what he did perfectly against the Patriots, and in the fourth quarter, we're going to give him for that. Idiots.
I told you, if they had had a quarterback, they'd have won the game.
I agree.
If they had a playmaker at quarterback, they'd have won the game.
Look, they had a great day, Greg, but it just sort of fell apart for them. They couldn't keep it. They couldn't keep it up. They couldn't keep their schemes up. They couldn't keep their mentality up. They couldn't keep their execution up. They just couldn't. They couldn't do it.
I just think the pumpkin, just turned up. I mean,
he was in second and long the entire fourth quarter. They didn't give him a chance. The pumpkin. They didn't give him a chance. He was in second and long the entire fourth quarter, man. And that's because they were going to give him Fournette. What are his names? Lawrence? Larry? What's his name? I don't care.
Lee?
Stupid. But anyway, let's still talk the game with Greg Bedard.
I'm in. I'm in with Bob's big boy, Siskel and Ebert.
Felger and Maz. Felger and Maz. We want to appeal to your ears.
Blood force drum!
We're going to run it right down their throat!
This is Felger and Maz on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Third down and nine for the Patriots. Again, 1:38 to go. Lewis behind Devlin. Allen motions right to left against a four-man front. Brady with a handoff to Lewis. Deion runs it to the left, trying to get outside to the 50. Oh. Lewis has a first down and more! Across the 40 to Jacksonville's 38-yard line with 90 seconds left and a timeout taken by the Jags.
Christmas time, you wrap presents, you seal the corners, and then when you're done wrapping that gift, you slap that bow up on top of it. That's about what we're getting ready to do here. What a run by the little guy.
One of the underrated things that I thought the Patriots did well in this game, and it, including that play, is that they either got up to the line late and snapped it quickly, or sent people in motion. They didn't really let the Jaguars get set. And there were a few times where they had trouble lining up. And on that play, the right end, I think it was Malik Jackson. I'm not exactly sure who it was. But once the Patriots went in motion, he did not kick out like they normally do. And he got caught. He didn't get on the edge, and the Patriots burned him. They did that, I would say, five or six times in that game, and I thought it was really effective.
Okay, reaction today with Greg Bedard, Boston Sports Journal. Tom and Haverhill, lead us off today. What do you got, Tommy?
Hey, yeah, I just want to bring up a point or see what you guys thought of the fact that the Jacksonville Jags sat on their hands for 55 seconds at the end of the first half. They didn't even try to go down and kick a field goal. The Patriots never would have wasted 55 seconds like that. What do you think?
Gotten a lot of calls on that, Greg. What are your thoughts?
They stayed true to who they are. I mean, again, this is a team that hid their quarterback for, 19 games this year? And they played well. They were not going to chance a turnover or something to screw it up. Patriots go in with the lead. The Jaguars, even though they gave up a late score in the first half, I still think they had momentum and felt good about themselves. And they didn't. They just know there's a limit to what they can do with Bortles.
Especially after they bollocks their previous possession.
See, I think it goes back to that.
Delay a game out of the timeout where it was on Bortles, and they said, enough. We're not going to give this guy another chance to screw something up.
I think that's exactly what happened. It cost them 7 points, and they said, well, what are we going to do, put it in the air now and give the Patriots a lead at halftime? No chance.
Martin on the Cape, go.
I haven't heard much discussion about the illegal shift call and the effect it had on the Jags' momentum, if any, at that point in the game, or was that call in the big picture pretty much irrelevant? Thanks, Mike.
Okay. Which one was the illegal shift?
Because in the fourth quarter?
He's not referring to the delay of game. The illegal shift. Was someone going forward at the snap? Is that what it was?
Yeah, there was a guy moving at the snap. And
I just can't remember.
Me neither. I don't remember the situation either.
When that was. Did it kill a drive? Did it not? Again, I just off the top of my head, I can fumble around the game sheet and take up some of your time to try and find it, but I don't think you want me to do that. We'll find it in the break and circle back to it. You know, I would say any sort of negative play they had, it felt to me like came back to haunt them, whether it was a sack or a penalty, because, again, that goes back to the quarterback. He can't throw your way out of trouble.
They just didn't have any confidence there. Ultimately, they didn't have confidence in the guy to make a play.
Devin and Malden. Go ahead, Devin.
Hey, guys. I have two quick questions. One, after watching Cooks drop that fourth quarter ball, how much trust do you guys have in him going forward? And then how serious do you think this Gronk injury is?
Okay, number one, Cooks, I feel better about him coming out of the game than I did before. Drop or no drop, that was a bad one. But I thought the rest of the stuff that he did was so good that I feel like he turned a corner, or just they needed him. They were down on weapons. He became a little bit of a focal point. He worked his way back to the ball. Drew a couple pass interferences by, again, not giving up on the ball. And I think I feel good. I feel good about Brandon Cooks. Should I?
I totally agree with you. I thought that Cooks played really well in this game. I thought that it looks like somebody has been working with him on his route running.
No almost, question.
Almost since the Troy Brown comment in the post-game show, because his route running was much better in this game for the most part. And getting in and out of breaks was much more effective. That's why he had so much cushion on the outside. And that's where he was at the beginning of the year. And I remember writing about you know, him and Brady had this chemistry going. I remember the Saints game. There were another couple games early, maybe Carolina and Houston, where they had a real chemistry going on with Cooks. Either he would run the go route or he would run a hitch, you know, depending on how the cornerback was playing him. And him and Brady were getting completely in sync. It was really working. And then for some reason, the middle part of the season just went away. And he had real trouble getting open. But it seems like, I don't know if it's Chad O'Shea, the receivers coach, somebody's been working with him in the last month, because he was much sharper in this game, and I thought he was effective.
On Gronk, I'd be stunned if he doesn't play in the Super Bowl. In fact, I'm surprised he didn't come back in that game. Honestly, with the way superstars, quarterbacks in particular, can just sort of plow right through the concussion protocol, I'm surprised he didn't come back in that game. I'd be stunned if he's not out there in 2 weeks.
Can you imagine the stink if he had come back on the field?
Yeah, I can imagine it, because it happened with Russell Wilson and Tom Savage and blah, 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 and everyone lives.
Oh, yeah, there would have been some huge investigation.
Oh, people would have been picking him. Yeah, but it happens across the league. Let them pick it.
I think, you know, just one thing on this upcoming Super Bowl, the matchup between Gronk and Malcolm Jenkins is phenomenal.
Who's Malcolm Jenkins?
He is the strong safety for the Eagles. He used to be on the Saints. He was cornerback, safety. He's a bit of a hybrid, veteran, smart, tough, physical. Those guys going to war for 60 minutes should be something else.
On the previous caller, quickly, the Eagles shift happened on the same set of downs in which they had the delay of game penalty. So the Eagles shift happened on first down. Well, wouldn't you know, it was a Lawrence Farnett run right up the middle for 2 yards. Interesting.
Did they then end up throwing a Grant and getting 14 yards in the next play?
Nope. They threw two short balls, then ended up in a 3rd and 7. So it was that Eagles shift that put them in 3rd and 7. The problem is, they picked up the 3rd and 7. They were just late on the play clock. So I don't think that shift at the end of the day was a big factor, because they didn't get the playoff in time on 3rd down. Mike and Revere, go.
Yeah, hi, guys. I don't know if this has been clarified. I didn't hear it yet on the radio. But on that Lewis fumble, now I had to watch that play a couple of times. I couldn't understand when I saw it the first time that they called the play dead. But then I noticed that when he went to get up, he braced himself on his knee. Is that why they called the play dead?
They called the play dead because they were confused by the whole thing. I don't even think at first they thought it was a fumble. And then they just sort of gave it to him. I think they were. I think the refs were out to lunch on that entire play. My thought.
No, I think that was a play that, depending on how they ruled it on the field, it could have gone either way. Because you could make the argument that Lewis had regained possession when he was down.
Agreed.
You could make that argument.
I thought he pinned the ball to his leg as his knee hit the ground, and that could constitute possession. I mean, I really think they could have ruled either way.
But the reason that they ruled it a fumble is because if you begin losing control of the ball, then you have to control it all the way through, sort of like a catch, all the way through to rolling over and everything.
Oh, well, then he didn't do that.
Right.
And then in that case, they blew it by blowing the whistle and negating what should have been a fumble return for a touchdown by Jack. So
they should have swallowed the whistle, because you always have replay as a backup on a turnover. Just let it go.
Right.
And then figure it out.
We've got Fitzy and Quincy. Hi, Fitzy and Quincy.
Hey, what's up, boys? Just want to point out, I don't know how CBS did it, but they ended up able to find a worse color man than Phil Simms. I'm watching the best game of the year, pretty much, and I want to punch my TV because I can't stand listening to Tony Romo.
Okay, your phone's breaking up. How'd you feel about Romo on Sunday, Miss?
Believe it or not, he's not as bad as he was early in the year. He was worse early in the year, and he beats the hell out of Simms. Simms sucked. I mean, who's kidding who? Simms said nothing. At least Romo does say something during the course of the game. As the year has gone on, I have found him a little more tolerable. He doesn't talk nearly as much as he did early in the year. Maybe Nance did, elbow him in the throat during one of the breaks. I can only hope.
He's got the Breer thing going on, huh?
Oh, my God. Romo early in the year? Seriously, you imagine Breer doing a game? Holy crap.
Both of them in the booth together?
Oh, my God. Nance would take the cord from his headset and strangle him right there.
Three up, three down with Bedard. He's looked over the film. He's got his clipboard out. We'll give you that right after Murray's update.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Thanks for ending your workday with Felger and Mads on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Dumb move.
And streaming at CBSBostonSports.com. Now, it's time for 3-Up.
Throws down low for Adam. Ball's tipped. And Julian diving for it. Did he make the catch?
He's got
it. He did.
3-Down.
Airborne to the uprights. And the kick bangs off the right upright. The reading.
With Greg
no
Bedard
good.
Of BostonSportsJournal.com. 3-Up.
Driving forward. Diving to the goal.
Three-Down.
Jackets after Garoppolo, throws down the middle, and it's deflected and nearly intercepted before it was nearly caught by Edelman.
That's 3 weeks in a row.
Here on Felger and Mez.
All right, folks, we're going to give you our three studs, three duds, three stars, and three whatever, dogs. From the Patriots win over the Jacksonville Jaguars. Also, coming up here in a few minutes, I'm going to be giving away free Bruins tickets. Free Bruins tickets for you. I'll give you details on that in a matter of minutes. So don't leave your radio if you're interested in Bruins tickets. Otherwise, three stars. Greg Bedard, who's your number one star for the Patriots?
Trey Flowers. Guy was incredible. I think I had him for 15 impactful plays in that game. He's just awesome. It was interesting to see. There were a couple offensive linemen, NFL offensive linemen. We're talking about Flowers on Twitter during the game, and they said the guy has like a 12-foot wingspan, and you just can't get into his chest. I mean, now between him and Wise, I'm beginning to wonder if that's sort of a criteria for the Patriots now. Long arms on defensive linemen.
And Flowers created some pressure for Harrison, right, which is yes. What I want to do because I don't want to give Harrison credit for anything. So can I go back in and say that it was Flowers that created the room for Harrison to get some pressure? Can I say that?
You could say that,
Thank
yes.
you. Okay, I'm going to go with that now.
Flav, that's a good selection, Greg. I endorse your selection on that. Trey Flowers.
You.
Yeah, very good job by you. I didn't pick him, but that's a good job by you. I went Danny Amendola first. Look, fourth quarter, game on the line, five catches, two touchdowns. Huge. In the absence of any other receivers, to me, Amendola number one.
Number two, Greg?
I had Malcolm Brown. He was incredible. He's the reason why they kept getting 1 yard in the middle. That guy would not be moved, and that was a huge matchup in this game. It was one of my key matchups, him against Linder, the Jaguars center, who is awesome and had about the best game a center can have against the Steelers the week before. And this week, Malcolm Brown dominated him, and that was a big reason why the Patriots were strong up the middle.
Oh, my God. I was so excited with that matchup.
I was focused on that one, too. Linder and Brown.
Center, yep. D-tackle. Oh, my God. He's so happy.
I mean, I couldn't take my eyes off it the whole day. I was locked in on that. I had trouble watching the ball in flight.
Forget Brady when you can watch Malcolm Brown.
Take my eyes off it. He wasn't perfect, but I went Stephon Gilmore. To me, Gilmore's been good now ever since the Pittsburgh game, really. But they need him now, and they're going to need him in the Super Bowl. I went Gilmore number two.
Who's your third star, Greg?
I went with Amendola, but you could also put Patrick Chung, Brady, or Brandon Cooks also in this mix.
Peter King, everyone gets an award.
I'm just telling you.
Yeah, there it is.
Just telling you.
Skill guys. Very unlike you.
Yeah,
I expected you to pick another fatty.
No, but Amendola was awesome in this game. I mean, especially once Gronk went out, you wondered how they were going to do it. Well, it was Amendola.
So I want Greg's assessment on this quickly. I actually went Nate Solder. Given all the talk about the defensive line of the Jags, I thought all in all, Not bad.
2.5 pressures allowed for him. That's nothing for him.
Yeah, I thought Solder did all right in this game. I'm giving it to him.
Three duds. Who's your number one dud for the Patriots, Greg?
McDaniels and Patricia in the first half.
Ooh.
I thought they got out-coached.
Yeah.
You know, they were great in the second half, but, you know, the first half, the Jaguars came and put it on them. And, you know, I think they were trying to play catch up for a while. And, you know, so that was my pick.
Okay, mine is, Greg, if you would, pick out your Patriot roster, please. Grab the whole roster. And you want to go down to the section where it lists the players by position. The whole one that says LB, I would like you to circle it. The entire linebacking core. They smelled in this game. Landon Roberts sucked. I thought Van Noy sucked. Eric Lee sucked. Flowers sucked. They all sucked. The whole linebacking core was dreadful in this game, and I'm worried about them in the Super Bowl.
Second dud.
I went with Rex Burkhead. I just didn't. He just didn't look ready. He didn't look up the game speed. He had that drop in the middle where I think Brady was actually expecting him just to sit, and so he didn't get walloped. I had a hard time picking any downs. I thought even your linebackers, I could pick out some really good moments for Roberts and Van Noy. So I had a tough time. So I'm stretching for Rex Burkhead.
Chung. Now, Greg watched every play closely. I didn't. I can't get that touchdown out of my head. He wasn't close.
Yeah,
it
wasn't good.
That was horrendous. I went Chung second.
Third, Greg.
Eric Rowe. You know, he had that last pass breakup on, I think it was the last series or the next to last series, but that was... It was more of a poorly thrown ball by Bortles than Rowe, and outside of that, he struggled in coverage.
Rob Gronkowski third, and not because he got knocked out of the game. That's not his fault, obviously. He dropped two balls before that. The play that Church hit him, he dropped the ball before he got hit. And the first time he was targeted, the ball hit both of his hands, and he dropped that one too. He dropped... Gronk in the early part, now he had a 21-yard reception on a ball that Brady threw behind him.
That was an awesome catch.
He did. He had to turn sideways, and he made a good play on it, but he should have had three catches on three targets.
There you go. Three up, three down, as promised. Back to your phones. Brian in Manchester. Hi, Brian.
Hey, guys. Just some more analysis about the end of that first half. I think that the reason the Jags bailed, you know, when 55 seconds left had more to do with the entire team kind of breaking down on them than just Bortles. And I can explain real quick. After that delay game penalty, there was a sack on Bortles and a holding penalty against the Jags at the same time. The Patriots just took the sack to move the down marker to fourth down. And when the special team came out, they kicked the ball with more than 2 minutes left. They could have let the clock boil down to 2 minutes.
That's right.
And then, not give the Patriots that 2 minute, you know, that 2 minute warning.
And then, Brian, there was the personal foul on Gronk, the PI down the sideline, the whole thing. Like that whole, that was... Jacksonville did not melt down in this game like Atlanta did in the Super Bowl or Seattle did in their Super Bowl, but that's the closest they came to it. That two-minute sequence on both sides of the ball with the delay of game, hold, sack, punted before the two-minute warning when there was no reason to, personal foul, PI, and I think that, you know, when the dust settled with that, Marone said, I'm going to put Blake Bortles back in the shotgun to have him chuck it 20 yards down the... No, let's get the hell out of here.
He was terrified. I can't say I blame him. I'd have been terrified, too.
We've got Tom in Concord. Hi, Tom.
Hey, how you doing, guys? What a game, huh?
Tremendous. Tremendous game.
Right? No, I was just saying, you guys were saying earlier about who was it between the call between Patricia and Belichick.
Yes.
I mean, I think it was a combination. I mean, you see them hug after the game. There was the biggest smiles on both their faces when they hugged each other.
It's true.
You look at Weiss, and you know all their highlights were with us. I mean, that's what makes them so special. And because they work together, and there's every aspect, like...
Okay, well, this is what's, you know, there's a lot of similarities to the last time you were here. The last time you were going for 3 out of 4, it was against the Eagles. The last time you were going for 3 out of 4, both coordinators were already gone. So there was some special stuff there between Belichick and his coordinators. I think all that exists right now. So you have Patricia leaving, which adds to it, but could that embrace been about as well? You know, we dialed it up here. We called it right in the second half.
Yeah, I don't know what it was. I'd love to ask Belichick. I wish he'd tell the truth. Like, why does he get so excited about, like, this game? Like, is it because they have the 2 weeks to get ready for the Super Bowl? Because, you know, most games he's just like, you know, whatever, we're on to the next game. You know, because they haven't won a championship yet. But, you know, I just think that the hug was about, you know, this was a really tough matchup, ultimately, and they figured it out. And I think it's because Patricia's on his way out.
Patricia was hugging everyone, man. You see him hug Tom Curran in the postgame?
Oh, I didn't see that.
Oh, he gave Tommy just a big, you know, I was going to say wet one, but, I mean, he just enveloped him. Oh, Patricia was just beaming.
Oh, so, and they went at it on a conference call once, too. Remember that?
I don't even know. I don't know what the backstory is. I think they all like Curran. I mean, Patricia was about to hump him. I mean, my God. It was it was graphic there for a second.
Tom, I'd prefer that the other way around.
So speaking of Belichick and his post-game actions, Greg wants to know, why isn't he giving Brady more credit for the injury? Why isn't Bill giving more deference and more, just more, I don't know, just giving the injury more space, if you will. What's going on there? Greg has some thoughts on that.
Michael Felger, Tony Maserati, Felger and Maz. Felger and Maz.
They're more scared of you than you are of them.
98.5, the Sports Hub. Sports Hub. Sports Hub. Sports
Hub. You know, I'd rather not do anything with my hand, but I just wrapped it up and try to cover it up and see if, you know, go out there and play and be effective.
Did it impact at all?
I'd rather not wear it. I think it sounds kind of arrogant to say, oh, yeah, it bothered me when we had a pretty good game, so I wouldn't say that. It's like when Tiger Woods said, like, that was my C game and he won the tournament.
Just your thoughts on Tom Brady, all that went on this week outside of the locker room and that performed the way he did today.
Yeah, well, it went on outside the locker rooms with all you guys, so I don't know about that. You could tell me all about that. Inside the locker room, everybody prepared for the game. Tom did a great job preparing. And I mean, look, Tom did a great job, and he's a tough guy. We all know that, all right? But not talking about open heart surgery here.
Yeah, but we mentioned this yesterday where it felt like Tom Brady was more than happy to sort of go there on his thumb injury and talk about it and say that it was a factor. And, you know, he would have said that it was a factor if it wouldn't make him sound arrogant. He was just worried about sounding arrogant. That's the only reason he didn't tell you that the thumb didn't affect him. So he kind of wanted to go there, and Bill kind of does not. What do you make of that, Bedard?
Well, and I think sort of exacerbating the whole thing is a day later, he goes on across the street, and he's even stronger.
Bill or Brady?
This is Belichick. And he says, they asked him about it, and he says, I think this was more of a media circus than it was a football crisis. I never really saw it that way. I don't think anybody did. So it was what it was. Sometimes things happen during the week, and usually if they happen early enough and they're not too serious, they have a chance to resolve, and that's basically what happened. I mean, it was like he's making it out like he jammed his finger.
Well, but
and you know, Doc Flynn writes for us at BostonSportsJournal.com, and she's written something I'm going to post tonight, and she's alluded to it that, and also there was a Sports Illustrated article that came out today, and they had a quote from somebody who was on the medical staff that dealt with Brady with the x-ray and said, I've never seen anything like this. Basically, they made it out like Brady had some sort of temporary dislocation of the thumb where it basically, the skin kept it in, but the skin ruptured as a result of the temporary dislocation. Like it was like a real injury. And even Brady talked about like it. You know, on Wednesday, he wasn't sure whether he was going to play. Well, and Belichick is just like, jam finger.
More media circus than a football crisis. He says, no, I never really saw it that way. I don't think anybody did. I think Tom did.
Yeah.
I mean, the way Tom carried himself, it felt like, you know, he felt it was very real.
I'm telling you, I still think there's a thing there that, and it's not entirely related to Garoppolo, but it's like, stop making yourself out to be the story here, Tom. Just play the game.
He's a a bitch.
So what do you think, Greg? What do you think that's about?
I mean, I guess I have no choice but to think that, you know, this is further illustration, a little bit of the subtext that's been going on between them, between whether it's, you know, Guerrero, Garoppolo, TB12, Tony Robbins. Like, I think Bill's just a little tired of it. He doesn't want to hear it anymore.
So you think it's a specific Brady thing versus just a generic stop talking about your injury thing? Because that's what I first thought, but I'm willing to be convinced that it's more this thing because this thing's more interesting.
No, I mean, I don't know. I mean, maybe that's it. And I wrote it on my website today. I said, do I think it could be Garoppolo related? Yes. Do I think it could be Guerrero related? Yes. Could it just be Bill's old school hard ass when it comes to injuries and he wants Brady to shut the heck up? Could absolutely be that. I don't know.
I don't think it's that thing. I don't. I to me, there's more there than that.
What's the SI story? I got to see the SI story. They had more details on it, eh? Keep going, Maz. I'm sorry.
No, just the way he said it, the way Bill said it. Like, look, we're not talking about open heart surgery. Would you cut the crap? What are we going to do? You know, make this guy out to be a war hero next? Is that the deal? I think he's irritated by it. I think he's irritated by this whole, you know, on some level, Brady, 40-year-old phenomenon, fountain of youth bullcrap. I think he's tired of it. It's, and look, maybe on some level it is because he had to trade his guy, and he didn't want to trade his guy. But I don't think it's just because we don't talk about injuries. He would have been much more generic if that were the case.
Okay, so I had the SI story.
Yep.
And, you know, the whole thing, he bolts from practice, goes to get an x-ray. They do the whole thing, oh, my season can't end on a handoff, that sort of thing. Inside the x-ray room, this is by Greg Bishop, by the way. Inside the x-ray room, he noted that the skin hadn't been sliced open. Rather, it appeared to have pinched until it ruptured, which would go along with this whole dislocation thing. Like the bone was popping up.
Like the skin, this is what you were saying the other day, that the skin was stretched so much that it ripped.
Yes. He asked one of the Patriots doctors, how does the skin split like that? And the doctor said, I've been doing this a long time, and I've never seen this before, one physician told him, adding that the wrist usually absorbs the kind of impact he took, often leading to dislocation. So, it was pretty serious, and a lot more serious than people I talked to let on. And, you know, so Tom, according to this, this goes in line with what Tom's been saying. Like, this was weird. This was like it bloody, all this stuff, and he thought his status was in doubt on Wednesday.
And meanwhile, I'm sorry, what's Belichick calling him, Murray? Belichick comes in out of the game and basically calls him a Sally.
He's a bitch.
Yeah, that's excellent.
If you compare it, I went back and listened to it too. If you compare it to how he talked about Danny Amendola, gushing about Amendola, and then he gets a little salty when asked about the hand because he's a bitch.
I want to read that. This skin ripped because it stretched so much. What happened to the hydration? Did he not drink enough water?
Okay, so those are our thoughts on that. Robert Kraft, in an interview, and you'll hear this coming back as well, basically admitted to the clash of egos, or, you know, whatever you want to call it here, in an interview with William McGinnis. You'll hear that coming back.
Felger and Mez. Felger and